friends. I'm Doc Coleman, and I'm your host for the Balticon 47 wrap-up from Swimming Cat Studios. This week's episode deals with the art of transforming raw audio into podcasting gold. Or how not to sound like you're working from a home studio, even though you are. Yes, this week we're looking at the panel Podcast Editing, recorded on Saturday, May 25th at 8 p.m. with Chris Snellgrove as the moderator and panelists Hugh O'Donnell, Chris Lester, P.G. Hollyfield, and P.C. Herring. Our experts list some of their biggest podcasting pitfalls, where they went to learn about the art of editing audio, their current software and hardware setups, and some other tools that you might just want to check out. But most importantly, back up all of your original audio files, folks. There is a ton of useful information in this episode, as well as anecdotes from the panelists on how they've dealt with various problems in the past. In fact, there's so much good info, let's just get on with the panel. Enjoy!
So, it is time to start our podcast editing panel.
We'll edit that later.
Right?
Wait, what time is it?
Oh, time?
Dual time!
Editing marker.
And take two. You guys, thank you for coming. We can go down the list of the panels and give me your 30-second intro.
Okay. Hi, I'm Hugh O'Donnell. I'm the host and editor of the Way of the Buffalo podcast.
I am Chris Lester. I am the creator and head writer of the Metamore City podcast, which has been on hiatus for the last little bit, but is going to be returning this fall.
Very good. P.G. Holyfield did a podcast novel called Murdered Avedon Hill. Currently, I'm doing a Game of Thrones podcast called Beyond the Wall.
I'm P.C. Herring, the author and producer of Cybrosis, as well as several other short stories in various anthologies for Scott Sigler, T. Morris, Philippa Valentine, not the least of which was the Parsec Award-winning short story The Seven for the Tales of the Archives.
Mm-hmm.
So we have quite the load of experience of podcasters here across. This panel, we want to talk about kind of basic editing, podcast editing 101, how not to sound like you're doing it in a home studio, even though you are doing it from your home studio, pitfalls that you've avoided or not avoided from.
That's better.
So how long did it take you to finish your book at PG?
Right.
2 years.
So let's start with you, PG. What's the biggest pitfall that a new podcaster when editing audio needs to avoid?
Well, I know that Chris and I had the same sort of setup as far as we were getting audio from many different people doing character voices. And probably the biggest thing I had to learn was how to, well, the end result is had to create a sound floor that would mask anybody that was sending in audio that wasn't as clean. They weren't recording in the same type of environment that I was able to recording.
So kind of having your room noise level throughout the whole entire thing, no matter how it came in.
Right. Okay. That's probably the biggest thing is when you're working with audio from different people, trying to make it sound like everybody's in the same room, and that's difficult at times.
PC, I know you do a lot of stuff with multiple people.
I do. My biggest hurdle, especially with Cybrosis, was timing. Not in the sense of scheduling, but in the sense of how much space do I leave between this person's line and the next person's line.
Mm-hmm.
How fast are they reading? Do I split another little bit between their sentences and pieces like that? I can go into more detail about that later on, but in general, that's where it was.
What about you, Chris? Biggest pitfall?
Biggest pitfall, I think, was probably figuring out how to get rid of sound reflections in the room. Because there will be things that you do not notice when you are recording, you do not hear in your headphones, and then you go and listen to your audio, and it sounds like you were recording in a tin can.
We've never had that experience.
Never.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
How about you, Hugh?
Mostly it's been people talking over each other, which is a great problem using the software capture I have is that it all puts to one channel. So making sure that everyone's spaced out well enough and everyone sounds right.
Okay. So there are the big pitfalls. I'm sure all of you kind of had various backgrounds of audio engineering experience or anything else like that. Where did you go to learn your craft? And if that was like your neighbor or if that was the guy that you knew that had been podcasting longer than you, where did you go to kind of learn the ropes?
I basically just jumped right in. I had no real training or friends that were more, you know, experienced. At that time, I had a bunch of the Adobe products, so I started with Adobe Audition, which is probably one of the most, at least at that time, was one of the most complex things to try to learn audio editing on. But it had so many bells and whistles. I mean, it was just it took me 2 years to finish, but part of that was the second half of it is a whole lot better because I found so many things as I was going along. To improve the sound or when it came to effects or what have you. So.
Cool.
GarageBand help files.
GarageBand help files.
I also had no formal training in production. I had talked to other podcasters who had produced and got some ideas about filters and things that I might want to look at to, you know, if A, then B kind of a thing. But a lot of it was just trial and error. Does this work? Does this not? And, I mean, the first episode I produced of Cybrosis was the first honest-to-God production effort I'd ever made. I built that up, tore it down, built it up, and tore it down probably 3 times before I got to a point where I was liking the output.
How about you two? Any special?
I did get my degree in production, or I did in communications and broadcast media, and then I didn't get a job in it, so I was feeling kind of unfulfilled when a friend turned me on to podcasting, and then I just asked questions of people.
So, like, people that you knew locally, did you go on, like, forums?
Well, I listened to podcasts, and lots of people do behind-the-scenes podcasts, and I just said, well, you're behind-the-scenes, and you did this. How can I do that?
I started out by listening to the companion podcast for Podcasting for Dummies, which is a series of short little podcast episodes that T. Morris did about the craft of podcasting, just to get started with the basics. Then I did some reading in the book, and I also listened to, there was a podcast that Steve Ely and Michael Menengay did. What was it?
Potholes.
Potholes. Yeah, it didn't last for very long, but they would tear apart other podcasts and basically say this is what they're doing wrong technically, and
with their permission at least,
right? And this is how to avoid this problem, and so that was really helpful. A few episodes of that definitely helped me to see a few things that I should avoid in the future. And then also I happen to live in the same city with and be friends with J. Daniel Sawyer, who is a professional audio engineer. And so I learned a lot just by hanging around Dan and watching what he does.
and watching.
And about the 7th time he explained the wall of sound, I finally understood what he was talking about. Fortunately, now you don't have to try to make sense of Dan's ramblings. You can go ahead and get his book, Making Tracks, where he explains it all very logically. And it is available on Kindle now.
And iBooks. How much did he pay you for that?
Absolutely nothing.
So, PG mentioned using Adobe Audition. What others? How do I want to say this? Have you guys started with one setup and changed it? Have you started with something and like this is the best thing since sliced bread and kept with it? What's your rig?
Software or hardware?
Let's go both.
Okay.
I started working with Audacity because it was free, and I still use it for my basic recording because it's simple and easy, and I know how to use it. But it has a tendency, when you're editing large files, it has a tendency for gaps to suddenly appear in the audio. Chunks of your data will just disappear and be replaced by silence without explanation. And so I don't use it for editing things anymore. Once I realized that problem and realized that I wanted to be able to do things like non-destructive editing, which is your friend. We'll talk about that later.
Yes.
Then I needed to actually get a digital audio workstation program, and I used Cubase because it came with my Lexicon Lambda, which is the device that I plug my microphone into that plugs into my computer. And it is not the most intuitive software in the world. I don't think any digital audio workstation is, but it's very powerful. And once I learned how to use it effectively, it was really, really useful. And any program like that, whether it's Adobe Audition or Pro Tools or Cubase, there's a steep, steep learning curve. Yes. But if you're going to do sophisticated audio production, it pays for itself many times over.
Okay.
I moved from Adobe Audition to Reaper on Mac.
Microphone.
Thank you. I'm good at editing, but not actually recording. No. Reaper is good. It's not free, but it's inexpensive, and they have a nice... You wait 10 seconds, and then you're still evaluating, so in theory, you would never have to pay for it, but I've paid for it and enjoy it greatly. Yeah, like you were saying, once you get into the... If you are doing something where you have the need for multi-track editing, then definitely spend the money, because it pays for itself very, very quickly if you stick with it.
I've started on a Mac Mini running GarageBand. It is free with every Mac you buy, and so I figured the barrier to entry there was pretty simple. I did all of Cybrosis on that production and have since upgraded to Logic Express, and I'm running it off of my MacBook Pro now. Logic Express is, I would probably call it a intermediate piece of software. It's very similar to GarageBand if you're running on a Mac OS. It will take some of your GarageBand settings and you can import them directly. And it's a little more powerful, especially in some of your post-production settings, but it doesn't have as steep of a learning curve as I've heard things like Pro Tool and Adobe Auditions and some of those other very, very expensive production software does. Mm-hmm. I consider Logic to be very fast, very efficient. It uses a lot less system resources, even though it does a lot more functionality-wise than GarageBand did. And I love it. That's what I'm on.
I started out using GarageBand, got a little bored with it, tried Audacity, got very frustrated with it, and now I use Reaper.
And I'll do a plug. Lynda.com doesn't, you know, pay me or anything, but mm-hmm. You guys can, there's a 7-day free trial for Lynda.com, and they have some of the best tutorials on pretty much every digital audio workstation I've ever seen. The one on like Logic I know is great. The one on Pro Tools is great, and it's really kind of informative, especially if you're, you know, really lost in the weeds, kind of trying to get started.
Can you spell that website for the...
It's lynda.com.
Yeah, you stole my one good point.
I'm sorry.
And the, you know, I think with almost any audio software, and obviously you guys can chime in, the help files built in, if you're going to spend money, a lot of them will have sample files for you to work with and tutorial files that they will walk you through how to do X, Y, and Z, whether it's online help or whether it's print help. I mean, there's a nice little CD package book that comes with Logic Express. It's like this thick, and there's a great index in the back if I want to find, how do I duck in this thing? There it is. Okay, and I've got my steps. And, of course, obviously the online resources are fantastic.
I would also say that if I were going back now and we're going to learn from scratch how to put together one of these big podcasts and learn a digital audio workstation, I would probably go back and do Ardour, ARDOUR. It is free. It is a open source software project that is available for Linux and Mac, and I think maybe also for PC. That's what J. Daniel Sawyer uses, and he does, it works miracles. It's astonishingly powerful. you can plug in one of these USB control services that looks like a mixer board, and you can live mix while you're editing. You can move audio up and volume up and volume down as you're listening through it, and it will pan it to the left and right, and it records all of these changes that you're making, so that when you then play it back, all of that stuff that you've done in the sort of live event is remembered. And so you don't have to go back and point and click and click and move and click and move in order to edit everything.
So while we're talking about editing, you guys mentioned non-destructive editing versus, the straight snipping stuff
and
splicing it around. How did you stumble across that? Was that a big learning curve of how to do that? Or was it just something that's, you looked into a help file and it was like, this is how to do A, B, and C?
I mean, the main thing when I started, most of the DAWs are non-destructive now, and mm-hmm. if you have a track open and you're making deletions, you're not actually making deletions to the actual sound file. You're making, mm-hmm. Basically markers to tell the system when it's processing the audio and building your final file what it's going to be. But mm-hmm. especially when I started doing this in 2006, 2007, you could easily have a sound file, whether it's a WAV file in there, and you're actually making deletions. All of a sudden you hit save and your file is completely, mm-hmm. corrupt. Can't go back and fix it, that's for sure.
I would say I do destructive editing on my straight read, but I save a copy of it and then I edit the copy. And so I do my basic recording, my raw narration, save a copy of it, and then go into Audacity and snip out all of my my retakes, my flubs. And so I get a straight, clean piece of narration, that I can then import into my digital audio workstation. And I can then cut it up into pieces. I can move it around. I can insert gaps. I can put in music and all those things. And that's all non-destructive.
Whether your audio station is destructive or non-destructive, it's always good to have a backup of your raw audio.
Multiple backups.
So that gives me another question that I was thinking about when I was thinking about this panel. There are two main types of takes, we'll call them. There's post-production fixes where it's like, oh, yeah, I totally, screwed that line up. I'm going to put a marker somehow, sound marker, actual marker in the file. And so this is the retake. Or there's like the punch-in process where you actually stop, go back, and then like redo a take over it. Favorites, pros and cons of either, which ones do you use, what do you like?
I personally prefer it when my narrators or readers, if they've got an error in their file, if they go back and retake and go. I mean, I am a fan of the just punch, not like the punch out where you stop the production, go back and delete, but get it all out there in the audio, and then trim it back together. That way, especially if you're doing dialogue between characters, and one character ends their sentence like this, and another character picks up the next sentence where ending the sentence where the previous sentence ending like this is not really appropriate. You can go back in and put a different piece back in to see if you can make that blend. This is back to the same person in the same room at the same time conversation.
And that's a really good function of Logic Express.
Anything with multi-track, what I usually do is I've got what I call a dump track, where I've got all that raw audio from the from my actor, and then when I basically decide this is the cut I want, I trim it out of the raw audio and I move it up to the production track. And then I will either delete the raw audio just to save file space, because again, it's all non-destructive and my original waveforms are still intact. It's just the internal database of a project file that gets edited. Or if there's something particularly humorous or more likely embarrassing, it goes down to my outtakes track.
Yeah, yep. Save an outtakes track as you're going through the editing process.
Makes it so much easier.
Usually if I'm recording or doing narration for someone, I will, if I make a mistake, I'll stop, snap my fingers, do something that when I'm looking at the audio file, I'll see where the breaks are. But you do need to make sure that you remove all them and not miss one, because you'll end up.
The single best trick I learned for editing mistakes, that little click of your tongues three times creates three sharp, narrow spikes in the waveform, which doesn't look like anything else that you would run across while you're working with audio. And so it's a perfect opportunity. Yeah, some people snap their fingers.
I've got a dot clicker.
Yeah, I prefer that because it's very fast, doesn't require any extra tools. I can just do it and then continue on. Record more takes than you think you will need, particularly if you think that you may have gotten a line wrong or you think that there may be different ways to deliver it. Go ahead and record it a few times. If you think you may have said a paragraph a little fuzzy, don't wait. Just go ahead, pause, say it again. It's easier to go back through and clip out the ones that you don't want than it is to try to re-record and snip it and paste it back in. Because one of the things that people don't realize until they do this is that your audio environment changes in subtle ways every time you record. With the same equipment in the same spot in my house, it sounds different from day to day. I can tell, and your listeners can tell, if I recorded a section, two different sections on different days. It's really obvious.
Well, and your voice changes too. I mean,
yeah, your voice changes too. Exactly.
Which is, I mean, like you said, it's a lot easier to go back in and just do it on that same site. I did a production of a short story in two sittings. I had a head cold in the first sitting, and I was doing it because it was a Skype live chat, and we were recording as we went. And then I went back and cleaned up the rest of it, and went back and re-recorded, you know, what was out there. I can tell. I know exactly when I recorded what, and the thing was we weren't recording sequentially, so I can't even say, well, the character was sick, because in one scene he's fine, and the next scene he's congested, and the next scene he's fine, and the next scene he's congested. So I'm going to have to go back and redo pretty much all that audio from scratch in one sitting, and it's going to be a real pain in the butt.
I'll just do another commercial plug. For those of you that have head colds, when you're doing those breathe right strips that people use to go to sleep,
nice. Oh, I hadn't thought about
those. Those are amazing to open you up if you're a little bit stuffy in your recording.
I haven't even thought about that.
So, Chris, have you released an outtake file of just?
It's called the chipmunk file.
We can do a song.
But the bottom line is, there's a lot of tools and add-ons you can use to mark your file and to change your voice, but the best tool you have is your voice. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's another one that I oftentimes get asked about, you know, can I just fix this stuff in post? Can I just change what the pitch is of the voice? Can I add a little bass or, you know, play with EQ? what's the podcasting 101 answer to that?
Garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah. I think in some cases you can play with the EQ, you know, bring up the bass, drop the treble, play the mid-range a little bit more. But if you're going to use a pre-built filter, like a pitch shifter, that says, oh, we'll translate, you know, I'm trying to do a kid's voice, and I've got this low, deep bass, so I'm just going to translate my voice up a fifth. That's a musical term for those of you out there. It sounds synthesized and processed.
Unless you're trying to sound like an alien or a monster, or a machine, don't depend upon post manipulation of the audio to change your voice.
If you do try it, do the least amount of change as possible at first, and see what that, and then have at least five people listen to it, because you can say, "Oh man, that sounds awesome," and then you sound like Mickey Mouse.
Right? Now that said, some filters like echo and reverb work fantastic in post, but in terms of voice.
Aren't really like cleaning up or
right,
correction.
Those are more effect. Right. Excuse me, you're right.
Mm-hmm. I have a thought come back to me. I'm still formulating it.
He's still stuck on the chipmunk song.
Yeah, you can change your voice, but you're going to be changing everything else that's in your file, and your room tone will change with it.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
That brings up the room tone is another thing that I think a lot of people sometimes struggle with.
Okay,
go ahead.
Okay. One piece of post-processing that I always do is leveling the audio. Because when you record, some of your audio is going to sound louder and some of it's going to sound softer because you're closer to the microphone or farther away. And just little changes will cause very big changes in the output. And you will also get different voices from, if you do a full cast audio production like I have, then each of your narrators or each of your voice actors is going to be recording at different volumes. You do not want to make your listener fiddle with the dial constantly. Or if you've got multiple people in the room for a conversation, a roundtable type podcast, you do not want people to have to turn the knob up every time one person speaks and turn it down every time somebody else speaks. There is a very simple free program. It is called Levelator. And it is amazing how well this thing works. It evens out all of the audio at nice maximum volume. And I take that, I take my narration track and I levelate that. And then I will do the same for my voice actors files as well. And I just use those levelated files and drop them into my digital audio workstation.
Things that I've run into with that, though, is that it will also increase your room noise.
Yes.
It can. It can.
And that's...
I've found that it helps to go through beforehand and do a noise removal.
Mm-hmm.
To take that out first and then to level it.
Yes, that is the one downside of Levelator. I mean, I echo everything Chris has just said, but I want to add to it that Levelator cannot be your one-stop shop, fix-everything tool.
Right.
Because Levelator, and I see the link on PG's phone, so I'm going to let him talk about it here in a second, Levelator does not distinguish between sound effects, vocal narration, and music. God forbid, music.
Right.
If you're doing an audio drama, and I know Chris can talk about this, and mm-hmm. I can talk about this, and you're putting in, you've got an action scene, you got a fight going, mm-hmm. and you put in a low volume relative to your narration mm-hmm. of action music, and it's kind of just under the surface, Levelator is going to take it up.
So Levelate before you put in any of that stuff. Only do it on single track, single voice audio.
Yes.
But, PG.
But, there is actually a new service that I've used really only for voice, but it does really good stuff, and it's called Alphonic. It's alphonic.com. It's a free service. A-U-P-H-O-N-I-C. You upload your file, it goes through its does the leveling, will do loudness normalization, it says it does audio restoration, and it does a lot of things, and it's still going to, like you're talking about, if you have imperfections, sometimes it might make it worse rather than better, but mm-hmm. it does take into account a lot of things that Levelator does not.
Mm-hmm.
So it is something to try if you're doing a larger production. You've got a lot of stuff going on.
And in theory, you can run that with a multi-track production, because in theory, I was talking to Chute Schubert this morning about it, and in theory, it is smart enough to detect intentional music sound versus vocal sound, and based on your settings, make adjustments accordingly. I cannot honestly say I've used it yet because I haven't come to a production that's ready for it,
mm-hmm.
but I'm looking forward to experimenting with it and seeing what it can do.
One other thing, noise removal will only work when the person is actually not speaking. So if your noise in the room is substantial, then you will hear it cut out when the person pauses, and you will hear it come back in when the person talks. And that you can't get rid of that. It's endemic to the environment. That's why I said garbage in, garbage out. Start with the cleanest environment you can to record.
Well, I think a lot of people, at least that I've heard, they use like a noise gate. Like I know GarageBand has a noise gate. I know Logic has a noise gate,
mm-hmm.
where it's like anything that drops below a certain decibel level is actually just silenced. Mm-hmm. And it really is jarring because yeah. you hear this nice kind of warm room tone,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden it's like...
Yep.
And that goes back to the sound floor.
Right.
One of my voice actors for Cybrosis recorded literally 60 seconds of dead silence before every one of his tracks so that I would have a sound floor with which to work. And that way I could drop it in and just lay it down under him if I needed it to. I ended up not using it as much because his voice saw a lot of resynthesis for specific reasons to the story. But if you don't have a good sound floor or you're not prepared to use a sound floor, you're going to see a lot of that kind of effect, especially if you're using filters.
Mm-hmm. Another thing to think about is look for a microphone that has a cutoff in its, detection levels. The MXL990, which I use, is a mid-range semi-pro mic. Costs about $90. You can sometimes get it for less. But it does a pretty good job of cutting out ambient noises that drop below a certain volume threshold. So that can give you a cleaner signal to start with, because it's just not detecting those little room noises that would otherwise be playing merry hell with your sound file.
Or the planes buzzing your compartment complex.
Right, yeah. I don't hear planes and trains and buses as they go by, which is really, really handy because I live near an airport.
Yeah.
I live near I had to stop recording every 5 minutes or so because the next plane was about to fly.
Doesn't help with dogs, though.
No. Or birds. Chirping birds in spring.
Or chirping birds in your house. I lived with a roommate who had a cockatiel. Dear God, I wanted to kill that thing.
I am so sorry.
Yeah. Or construction noise. I had neighbors rebuild their house, and they spent a full year hammering.
Wow.
Ouch.
So I have my software that I got. I've gone to lynda.com, or I'm versed on it. I've taken all the tips and tricks that you all have had. What is your process? Like, if you're going to sit down and say, okay, here's step one and here's the last step, can you talk about the process that you use to get into kind of a rhythm so you don't kind of lose a step or get mixed up?
I guess my two biggest pieces of advice with that, it depends on what you're doing. If you're doing an audio production where you have a lot of voices, keep track, you know, if you have a master track or setup where you have, you know, if you have intro, outro music, you have certain things that appear within every one of your episodes, just keep that saved as a project so you can have that to have as your starting point. The other thing would be keep track at all times of what you're doing to make something work right, because you spend so much time, what did I do last time? And if you got it written down or saved as somehow so you can refer to it easily, that'll save you a lot of time.
In terms of, I mean, I agree. I mean, I've got a little production notebook I keep by my side all the time. I've got a color-coded system, and it's a godsend. But to more directly address your question, one of the first things I do is, for my part, because what I do for my productions is I will narrate, and then I will bring voice actors in to do characters. So I will start with my narration, my raw narration, and sit down with the manuscript and then just start piecing it together. And I'll just start going through it pretty much sequentially. And when I get to a point where I need a line from a character, I'll go to where I keep their audio file for that chapter. I'll bring it into my dump track, and then I will find their line, screen them, find the track I want, bring it up, move. It's a very manual process. There's not a lot of automation. It's a little anal. It's very time-consuming, but it then gets me to where I need to go. And all the while, I'm making notes. If I have to bump him up a level, then I know I've got to bump him up a level in every other chapter I'm going to get from him as my baseline. If I'm missing a line, if he mispronounced something or he just didn't record it because I forgot to highlight it, for example, I make a note, and then when I'm done with my recording session for that day, I sit down and I send one email out to every affected voice actor and say, okay, I'm working on chapter two, it's sounding great, you know, give some constructive feedback, I need, if you can, this, 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 and this, because I want to send one email with that checklist, and I want to send 5 emails in 10 minutes. I get that in my office every day. It drives me nuts.
I just want to say one thing because it bounces off of him. The only difference is that I do a reading of the entire, if it's a chapter, I'll do the entire reading of the whole chapter, including lines that other people would do, so that if they request it or they need it, or I know it's someone that might need a push, I'll send them the whole file, the raw file, and say, so they can hear the lines, because there's always, no matter how many notes you put in, you might have confusion as to what type of read you would like to hear.
The motivation. That's something I need to do myself as well for my next production, definitely.
As far as keeping things organized, I set up, because digital audio workstations and many other recording programs do not record to a single file, they actually have a project file that organizes the information, and they have a bazillion little tiny files that are connected to it. I start the new project inside a subfolder that is just for that episode. And then that way I will never accidentally delete that project file or the attendant files that go with it, because the subfolders that these programs create often have very unhelpful names that do not tell you anything about what they are. And there were a couple of times early on in my podcasting career where I accidentally deleted a folder that I thought I didn't need anymore, and then it turned out to have data for an episode that I was working on. So compartmentalize everything into subfolders. As far as my workflow, I do my basic narration, output that to a WAV file, levelate it, take the levelated WAV file, import it into a new project that has the name, whatever the episode name is, and then edited narration. And then I go through in Audacity and I do all of my destructive editing, clipping out all of my flubs and stuff so that I have a nice clean narration file. And then I will export that as a new WAV, and then I will import that into my digital audio workstation as my main track, which I can then cut into pieces and move around. I have music on a second track, a second line in the audio workstation, so that I can adjust. I can just say everything in this track is minus 20 volume compared to the narration, or I can adjust that up and adjust it down as needed. But anything that I drag into that track is automatically going to have its volume adjusted accordingly.
Right.
Have a separate one for sound effects. Sometimes I'll have three or four for sound effects so that I can have one that is for sound effects on the left side of the sound field, one that's for the right, one that's for the center. And then I can adjust those accordingly. So if I want to play with the 3D space in the stereo audio, I can do that by moving a file from one of those tracks to the other. Then have a separate track for promos that I'm playing, because often those need to have their volume adjusted relative to the main narration. And then each of my, I'll have a separate track for my voice actors, and I may have two or three of those, because sometimes characters talk over each other. Sometimes it's necessary to adjust their positions in space. Even just a little move, like 20% left and 20% right, which for two characters that are in a conversation, can make it easier for the ear to distinguish between them when you're listening to it.
So I record interviews, which is a slightly different process, but I am usually left with two or three separately recorded pieces of audio, which I convert into WAV or IAF and level 8 separately, and then give each one a separate track. And I always listen through the first time and make notes. And for an interview, this is good, because it not only are you marking out where you need to cut, where you need to bring stuff up, and where you need to bring stuff down, but it also lets me organize my show notes before I've even edited it. And then I go back and do my editing passes, and then I listen to it again. So it is time-consuming. You're going to listen to everything three or four or so times. So like what you are working with.
Mm-hmm. one other note. Never, ever, ever compress your audio until you are done.
Yes.
Because the act of turning something into an MP3 or an M4A or whatever new thing format, format is coming down the pike, AAC, all of these things destroy information about the sound file. They're destroying information that they think you can't tell the difference in, but when you do that repeatedly, so you compress a file and then you import it into a audio workstation to work with a project, and then you compress the results, then the file quality goes way down noticeably. So whenever possible, work with uncompressed files.
And uncompressed files eat up a lot of hard drive space.
Yes.
But space is cheap. You can go to Best Buy and get a 2 terabyte hard drive and spend less than $100 for it.
Pretty much.
And that 2 terabytes will cover, I don't know what the ratios are anymore, but
it'll cover a lot of episodes, yes.
Of uncompressed audio.
You can basically figure on an hour of uncompressed audio being about 500 gigabytes, or 500 megabytes, excuse me.
So, 4,000 hours of uncompressed audio?
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll be
That's
fine.
That's a lot.
Yep.
If you're looking to transfer, let's say you record something for someone and you are going to send it to them and they're going to insert it into a larger production, what's a good uncompressed file format to send? Because usually it's still just in that
WAVE.
WAVE or AIF are the gold standards. Things like Google Drive and Dropbox are your friend for moving these kinds of large files. Yeah.
Send it. You send it. Also,
you send it works
too. You send it will work. I know escape artists uses you send it for all of their audio submissions from their narrators.
We move it is another one. That's like you send it.
I haven't heard of it, but I'm sure.
Yeah.
And you send it. Basically, you go to usendit.com and you log in. You send it to their email address, and then they upload it to the target Dropbox. Basically,
yeah.
Right. You don't even have to have a Dropbox account. Mm-hmm. You just plug it into their site, and they dump it into my Dropbox, basically.
And broadband is becoming accessible enough that it's not as big of a concern anymore to move large files as it used to be.
Yeah. But do not try to email those files.
No.
It just will not work. No. I don't know of any site larger in terms of attachment allowances than Gmail these days.
Mm-hmm.
And even their limit is 25 megabytes.
Right.
And you just, no.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting kind of to the point where we're wrapping things up. What other questions from the audience can we pitch out? Yeah.
I've been doing some voice work with various different people sending files and stuff. And I've had a few people ask me to have each line in its own file.
Mm. Good heavens.
That drives,
that
as a producer, that drives me nuts.
Insane. Does anybody know what the deal is?
Well, I actually have a voice actress who did this for me, or for one of my shorts. I didn't ask her to do it. It was just her process. And it was easier in some ways as a producer, because then I just had to bring in one file in and place it, as opposed to cutting and pasting and finding the right and doing that. But I don't know, because personally I would rather deal with... I mean, I got enough files as it is. I'd rather deal with
no
fewer.
No kidding.
And yeah. I mean, I specifically emailed Laura. I said, I appreciate that you're sending me one file for each line. You don't have to. I can cut them. And she said, oh, no, my audio software automatically does that. When I hit the pause button or when I hit the break button, I don't know what she's using, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Audacity would do it.
She said she's not using Audacity. She's out in California doing professional work for games and stuff. I'd be shocked if she's using Audacity. That's not, but she said, yeah, it's just my normal process. I'm like, okay. But no, I...
What else?
Another question.
You see, you were talking about trying to create the same sound floor within a production where you've got multiple people sending you different files. What's, I can't say the best way because I know there are probably...
How do I do it?
What's a simpler way?
In my case, I use my sound floor. Because my sound floor is my studio where I know what I can do, and it's because it's my narration, it's my voice carrying the majority of any given chapter of content.
Okay.
And I'm talking purely in podcast fiction. So what I will do is, if I'm going to build a sound floor out, is I will do what Rich did, and I'll record a minute or 2 minutes of just silence, so you know trains are rolling by, and then I'll just leave it out there. And basically just copy, paste, and drag if I need to fill in a gap or just to kind of build that sound floor out. And it may sit in its own track with identical settings to my narrator track. But that way I can fill that in. So if I get, if I'm using like filtered audio from a voice actor and we get these kind of clippy sounds, I'll just drop some of my sound floor in under it, and then that fills out, the overall spectrum of what you're hearing. It's more of an art than a science, and
I mean, audio editing is.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, no, sorry. And so I caveat this with, of course, your mileage may vary, but that's the way it works. That's the way I managed to make it work for me.
There's a gentleman back here with the beard who's got a question. Yeah, you.
Yeah, you.
Another thing that I've had a trouble with is I do use a template for my episodes, but I have like kind of music bits that come in at kind of similar times, but they're never really right at the same time. And also, the amount of time that that segment may last is indifferent in length.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, it's kind of frustrating to kind of do the fade in and fade out. I'm using Audacity, so it's not super awesome. I was wondering if there's a smarter way to organize repeated but not the same length music under,
What I did for theme music, it kind of what we would call bed music, kind of that little underlying theme under like general conversation at the back end of like an episode of Metamore, is I took, and I have a slight music background as well, so I can get away with this a little bit more because I took my music and I found where good breakpoints are.
Mm-hmm.
Where can I
loop it,
cut, and I've got a front end, a middle end, aka my repeat loop section, and then what musicians would call the coda, which would be the tail.
Mm-hmm.
And I just keep looping until I'm done looping, and then I drop that coda in, and I can expand by anywhere between a minute to a minute and a half at a time,
mm-hmm.
and the audience is none the wiser.
Mm-hmm. You front load the work, basically.
Right. Basically, what I have is all of my repeated elements, my title card, my cast card, my licensing cards, all those things, you know, this podcast created under Creative Commons, no derivatives, non-commercial license, that's all pre-recorded. And so when I basically assemble my final episode, I've got the chapter content as its own file, all of these pieces, and then the music under it, and then I just record whatever commentary I want to put on the back of it and I go.
Now, I'm not sure if this was part of your question. You'd said something about the fade-ins and fade-outs. One of the this is probably setting in all of them, but some I found in Reaper that I hadn't used in other tools is that you create your envelope points where you're raising or lowering your volume. There's a setting where if you want to move that file along the track, so it's at 10 minutes when you're doing one week, mm-hmm. but it's at 8 minutes the next week, it'll keep all those envelope points with the file as you slide it over. So it's not like you have to mess around with the fade-ins and fade-outs again after that.
It's just the length of the file
right.
needs to be different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I would say...
So you're talking about the music or about bumpers?
Well, bumper locations between seconds. They're usually during the segment, so it's music underlying.
Yeah, I would say go back to, the very basic music format of A, part, or section A, section B, section A, section C. Find where those kind of chorus refrains, and I don't know if you're using vocal music or instrumental music, and see if you can't find a spot where you can, repeat a phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And then just trim that, save it off as its own derivative file, and then it's just there so that you can just drop in and mm-hmm. just space out as you need.
And zoom in and look closely at the waveform to see where it hits the zero point. And that's where you cut. Because if you cut at a place where it's, there's still some sound pressure, then you're going to hear a little, cut when you stitch it back together. But if you do it when it's at a natural null point in the wave, then nobody's going to be able to know the difference.
And there's also music out there specifically made for moving.
Exactly.
Yes.
You can just take the same thing over and over again and just
put
it in and out at the end.
GarageBand and Logic have loop tracks in them. Granted, they're very basic, so they may not work for what you're needing, but they'll give you... A lot of software will have a media bin of a pre...
A lot of Incompetech.com music is loop-friendly, and it's all labeled loop-friendly.
What was that?
A lot of music from Incompetech.com, which is a Creative Commons license. I-N-C-O-U-M-P-T.
Is it U?
There's not a U.
No U.
C-O-M-P-T-E-C-H. Yeah.
I have it bookmarked. Sign up.
I'm sure if you Google
don't type it in, you'll find it.
Yeah.
There's also the Digital Juice Stack Tracks libraries are really, really effective. They're not that expensive, especially when you get them on sale.
Digital Juice over the past couple of years has been moving out of audio and into video. Occasionally they'll bring Music Box or Stack Tracks out of the vault.
Mm-hmm.
And if you happen, or if you're on their deal of the day mailing mm-hmm. list, and
watch
you
it, see snap it up.
Music box or stack track, jump on that like it's going out of style.
Because it is.
They still have the sound effects collections.
Yes, the sound effects collections come out sometimes.
But those
you also have some music in
those too. Yeah, but the sound effects collections are also very expensive.
But you can get them on sale too.
Yeah, so you can get them on sale, but you know,
yes.
You can't wait till the sale. But yeah.
Alright, so that's about all the time we have. If you guys will go ahead and promote, you know, whatever you'd like to promote, the last couple things, where can people find your work? Where can they stalk you on the internets?
Oh, I'm sorry, I get to start this one off. Again, I'm PC Herring. I'm kind of in between a bunch of projects, but I will pimp out my own personal website, pcherring.net. It will be, once it gets fully developed, my writer's hub for all of my writing and podcasting productions. Sweet.
P.G. Holyfield, you can find the podcast for Murder at Avedon Hill at pgholyfield.com. I also have a website, specficmedia.com, which is where we do the Beyond the Wall podcast, and we'll hopefully be adding some more podcasts there this fall.
You can find me tomorrow at this room at 5 p.m. for the Metamore City live audio drama, which is going to be fun. And the podcast archives are at metamorcity.com. Also on iTunes, Metamore City. I am on Twitter as Ethereus, Ethereius. And look for the podcast to come back this fall. Also, the stories are available in ebook on Smashwords, the short stories, and then the novels are coming later this year.
Hey, you can find my podcast at wayofthebuffalopodcast.blogspot.com or in iTunes, and hopefully soon I'll get Stitcher worked out. And you can follow me on Twitter and Tumblr as Hatching Phoenix, which is all one word and spelled like the city.
All right, thanks so much for the panelists.
And thank you guys for coming.
Enjoy the Baltimore.
Blow out a mixer channel.
I'm too lazy to use a mixer.
Now, Meningay over at Farpoint Media, apparently, this was like a year or two ago, he was missing a pop filter and gave a story with a lot of plosives to one of his readers, and all the plosives blew out the channel.
Wow.
He had to rip open the board and rebuild it.
Wow. Yeah, I actually had to get like a full camera tripod, because that's what fits this little thing, so that I can get a pop filter on this.
Wow.
So who is moderating this panel? Do we know?
I thought it was Chris Nelgren moderating.
Oh, it is Lester.
Guess what?
I think.
I'm not a moderator. I'm not moderating. Yeah.
Give me that.
What's up?
Give me that.
Nope. 8 p.m. Okay, panelists.
It's what's his name?
Yeah, it's not listed. Oh, moderator, Christopher Snellgrove.
Oh, it's Chris Snellgrove.
Yeah.
Oh, so.
Panelist Chris Lester, Paul Beal, PC. Yet, no one's name is right on here.
What do you mean nobody's name is right?
Is that mine?
Why? So, mine's
Socket
not
Universe.
Right.
Well, they give your full name.
Patrick?
Yeah, it's Patrick Redden.
Sweet.
Yes, that's already
recorded.
Sweet.
Did you say sweet?
Sweet.
It's a combination between sweet and woot.
Yes, sweet.
He's an author. He's allowed. We do this all the time.
Yeah.
Drive our editors nuts because of it.
Mr. Lester.
As always, fashionably late, making an entrance.
I'm just fashionable.
Got 1 minute to spare.
That's all right. Our moderator's not here yet.
Nemesis. Once again, side by side.
As it should be.
Do I need to separate you two?
Nah, it's been too long.
The love is gone. The love is gone.
So how do we edit that to make it sound in tune?
Auto tune anyone?
Look at all the little zooms. How cute.
There he is.
I was right on time.
Perils, podcasting pitfalls. Ah! All right, that's it. I'm out of here.